Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Swung and hit high to right down the line toward the pesky pole. Will it stay fair? And it's a home run. Maybe 5 feet beyond the pesky pole in opposite field. Homer for J.D. Martinez.
Recapping the Red Sox win against the Orioles.
Swing, there's a drive deep right center field toward the triangle. Jones looking up, and this ball is gone. Over the bullpen, into the bleachers, two-run homer, J.D. Martinez. He ties Mookie for the league lead in home runs. Two-run blast makes it 5-0 Red Sox.
Dial 617-779-7937. Now, Red Sox Review on WEEI.
What's going on, people? I'm Paul Gallant. The Boston Red Sox took down the Baltimore Orioles 5-0 this afternoon. It helps to have a crappy team like the Baltimore Orioles in the American League East, doesn't it? Man, 13 hits in a game. They get 12 singles, they get one double, and score a run. You get a 13-hit shutout. Did you know that? That is the first time this has happened in baseball since the 2008 Phillies on August 25th of 2008 pitched a team shutout allowing 13 hits. Helps to play a team that already is 17 games out of first place in the American League East. The Red Sox offense got it done today, and it was largely due to J.D. Martinez, who had two home runs. That gives him now a tie for the lead in the American League with Mookie Betts. They have 67 home runs on the season. That ties them for the American League lead, the Major League lead, with the Cleveland Indians. It is the most through 47 games in franchise history. The earliest record was 66 in 1977. So the offense is definitely playing its part. The starting pitching, solid today. Wasn't a great outing for Eduardo Rodriguez, who definitely had some issues giving up hits, a lot of them right back up the middle. But he had zero walks. His changeup looked especially sharp. He has seven strikeouts in 5 2/3 innings. He pitched 110. And as it always seems to happen with Rodriguez, the Red Sox got enough run support, and the Orioles could not figure out how to score a run. I want to give Rodriguez some credit for the way that he handled Manny Machado today, one of the best hitters in baseball. Got him out on a pop-up, a weak fly ball out, and a swinging strikeout as well. So, nice outing for Rodriguez, who, for whatever reason, has had success against Manny Machado in the past. Rodriguez did get a little fortunate. Loaded bases in the fifth inning. I know that there were two outs, but you thought with all the luck that he was getting and giving up as many hits as he did, nine hits, you'd think that the Orioles would have been able to put one across the plate. They were not able to do it. So the stories in this game, J.D. Martinez, who has just been outstanding, and every single time that I end up going on the air, I just sit back and I'm like, geez, how is he playing as well as he is? And maybe that's on me for doubting the guy. I was listening on the NESN broadcast of the game, and I believe it was Eck who brought up that Frank Thomas said he's the best hitter in baseball right now. Am I going to go that far, especially with Mookie Betts on this same team leading the majors in average and hitting the way that he has from the power standpoint in that leadoff spot with 15 home runs? I don't know, but I mean, between those two, holy smokes. It is the first time that the Red Sox have ever had two players hit 15 home runs apiece within the first 50 games of the year. And on top of that, prior to the Red Sox, the last team to feature multiple players with 15-plus homers within the first 47 games of the season was the 2001 Colorado Rockies with Todd Helton and Larry Walker. The last American League team to do it were the 2000 Mariners with Edgar Martinez and Alex Rodriguez, and the 2000 Angels with Mo Vaughn and Troy Gloss. Red Sox note the Twitter account with those tidbits. Man, they're getting a lot out of this offense this year, and you can't sleep on what Andrew Benintendi did today as well. Benintendi has been on a bit of a tear of late. I believe 11 for his last 23. He was 3-for-5 today with two runs batted in and a home run of his own. So getting some great performances out of the top of the order, and the starting pitching is doing just enough. And that bullpen that everyone is concerned about, especially in big games, wasn't an issue today because they didn't really need it. Will it be an issue the rest of the way? We'll see. I think when you're going up against teams like the Yankees and the Astros, that you're going to need to have better arms in that bullpen. But with the offense playing the way that it does, when you play scrubs like the Baltimore Orioles, you're going to end up fine. I'm Paul Gallant. This is Red Sox Review. 617-779-7937 is how you call in. If you want to tweet me, you can tweet me too. At Gallant Says. Let's lead off with Paul in Westfield. Paul, what's going on, bud?
Well, Paul, I'll tell you what's going on. We're not getting run down anymore, missing Big Poppy like last year. We're doing quite well. Imagine 15 home runs, two players. It's like we got Tyson and Ali. Just everyone shook up by it. And then our fourth shutout today. I mean, really can't complain where we're at. So far, so good.
Right. Right now, I mean, look, the Yankees are playing really well, but you've got the most wins in the majors because the Yankees have a couple of games that they've got to make up to catch up with you. They're playing outstanding from the plate. And you know, I don't want to dump on a guy because I know that the Red Sox, they do this a lot in the past. But, geez, Chili Davis must have been just awful as a hitting coach. Where they're hitting as many home runs as they have thus far this year, where the power numbers for this team that was just completely missing last year, now they're leading the American League, and homers are tied with the Indians for the Major League lead. It's crazy the difference from last year to this year, because for the most part, outside of J.D. Martinez, which has been a fantastic signing, it's pretty much the same team.
Yes, sir, it is. And that's a good question you bring up, is that Chili had to be that bad. So they got rid of Chili and got a new recipe. And, hey, how many – I heard them talking about we've done a lot more on-the-road games than the other teams. Most of
right.
our games at home are still to come. So – how much of a difference are we talking? Like, how many games about? 10, 12?
I feel like definitely like 5 to 6. A 10 to 12 definitely could be. I mean, look, you look at the way that they have played in these road stands, and I believe when I was on the air last week, they were wrapping up the second of, I think they have one long road trip that was as long as that one that they will be going on. And I think, 9, 10 games or so? They have one more of those, and that's it. And you're right. Playing a lot of games at home, it should help them out a whole lot. We'll see, though. I am very intrigued just to see how these matchups between the Red Sox and Yankees fare the rest of this year. Because right now, it doesn't really seem like either team has a leg up on the other. I'm surprised by how well the Yankees pitching has opened up the year. Like, I'm not the biggest Severino believer, and I'm always waiting for CeCe Sabathia to fall off. But they've been really good to open up the season. So we'll see. That's what I'm really keeping an eye on. And honestly, I do want to fast forward a little bit to get to the Red Sox next big series, because I am one of those who, if you watch an 162-game regular season, I don't really want to watch that much Baltimore Oriole baseball or whatever other scrubs that they're going to end up going up against. They have the Braves, who have been like surprisingly frisky of late. They have a Blue Jays homestand as well before they take on the Houston Astros at the very end of the month. That's the series that I want to fast forward ahead to, where they head to Houston for a 4-game road trip. 617-779-7937. Wally is in Fowl River. Wally, what's going on, man?
What's up, Paul? Like the previous caller said, there's no more crying. We need David Ortiz. I mean, JD, he's just a professional hitter. I mean, he's red hot. Mookie's red hot. 19 doubles, 15 homers. But the only thing left you got to do with this lineup is just tweak it at the bottom. Petey comes back, you bat him ninth. You keep Leon as your regular catcher. You have Jackie for defensive purposes. But that's about the only thing, because you really can't go through a whole season where you catch your bat in 188 and you send the fielder 163. One other thing about the bullpen, you got Wright in there now. You got a rubber arm guy. But he'll probably go. Dombrowski will probably go out and get another reliever without a doubt. But this team's, you know, looks like it's back on track again.
Definitely. And Wally, I ask you this about Pedroia. You mentioned him. You bring him into the back of the order. Do you have confidence that Pedroia is actually going to be a positive contribution to this team? Because I do wonder a little bit, like, they've been playing so well without Pedroia, and this was a guy who I think last year, maybe some of the young players were looking at him and saying, hey, man, you've got to be our leader. And I don't know if that's exactly the impression that he gave off to the rest of the team when he was there. I wonder what the reaction will be in the clubhouse to Pedroia's return. And I also wonder what he will actually be able to bring to the table from a hitting standpoint. Anyway, I'm curious. I have my doubts about a guy like Justin Pedroia coming back. I don't know that it's necessarily something from a clubhouse standpoint that's going to be like a cancer or anything like that. All I know is that he has always struck me as someone who, given just how long he's been with this team and the championship teams that he's been a part of, you would expect him to be more of that alpha personality, and he's never really been that. And, you know, there are some comments this offseason about the manager, John Farrell from last year. I think there were some other comments, of course, about Chili Davis, who really looks bad. Farrell looks really bad, too, now. And Alex Cora, that shakeup has somehow shaken the Red Sox out of the offensive woes that they had for all of last year. And to me, I don't really have an explanation. It should not be a manager leaving, right, that allows for a guy's average to jump almost 100 points in the case of Mookie Betts, or to see Xander Bogaerts hitting the way that he did, and he had the off day today along with Hanley, or to see Benintendi, who now is hitting really well of late, hitting confidently at the plate, going the opposite way. Like, he looks so relaxed at the plate. And it's funny because he sort of changed his appearance this offseason, where he looks like he's more uptight. He got rid of the long locks. Now he's got the more professional haircut and all of that. And here he is at the plate. He's doing a hell of a job. So, look, a game like this against the Baltimore Orioles, I don't know if I learn a whole lot going forward, but this should be the expectation. You play a dumpster fire like Baltimore over a four-game set, take three at the very least. You should sweep them. Hell, I mean, they're completely out of it. And I wonder with Baltimore, at what point do they think about trading Manny Machado? Because his contract's up at the end of the year, and there is no way in hell, if I'm Manny Machado, I'm staying with the Baltimore Orioles. They are a mess. With old man Buck Showalter still managing somehow. I don't know what you do if you're Baltimore, too. Like, at this point, what can you actually do to give yourself a little kick in the ass? I don't think that there's really anything that can be done. Where they're at right now, this is who they're going to be the rest of the way, and then they're going to lose a bunch of pieces this offseason. So I would think at some point they will start stripping parts. I guess the great question is when. As far as Wally's point about the bullpen, I also wonder when the Red Sox will actually look to trade for an arm in the bullpen, and we saw how suspect it was against the Yankees, and honestly, I think that's how you should be gauging the bullpen, and honestly, all baseball. For example, with the Astros, a team I cover on a regular basis, this is a team that has played, I would say, seven teams that are, at the very least, title contending this year. They played four against the Yankees. They played three against the Diamondbacks. And even though the metrics say that they have a pretty good bullpen, their bullpen has blown three of those seven games against teams that I consider to be at their caliber. I'm not really sure how much I buy into the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, of the United States, of North America. I hate that. I hate their name. It's so self-important. You're in Anaheim. No one cares. When I'm looking at them, I'm wondering, how are they going to fare against good teams? And even if, like, in a game like today, where they do a decent job of keeping Baltimore from scoring after a strange 9-hit, 7-strikeout, no-walk performance by Eduardo Rodriguez. And he deserves credit today. He handled Manny Machado very well. But those bullpen guys, when they're going up against good teams, that's what makes me nervous. Because I feel like they're going to piss their pants out there. And, you know, you saw it happen against the Yankees a couple of times. 617-779-7937. Drew's in the car. Drew, what's up?
Hey, Hey, what's going on? I keep hearing people call in about how excited they are, and this team's back, and this guy's great, and that guy's great. Listen, the Red Sox are not very good, okay? Over the past 30 games, they're like a game or two over 500, and that's really what they are. Everyone's got to throw out the first 17-2 when everyone's getting acclimated. This bullpen is downright bad, okay? Kind of to your point, it is a bad, bad bullpen. Pomerantz is horrible. E-Rod.
Yeah, and we're not even sure if Pomerantz is going to make his next start at this point, because I heard on the broadcast, I guess, that they haven't put in a starter for Thursday's game in Tampa Bay against the Rays.
And everyone should pump the brakes about E-Rod. Yeah, he shut out, and he couldn't even go six innings against one of the worst lineups in baseball and the worst team in baseball. So I'm sorry, but I'm not sold on.
You're really down on him, Drew. I honestly disagree from this standpoint. You have three starters who are extremely good, and while the lineup 1-9 isn't dominant, your dominant hitters in this lineup are enough to give you run support on a night-to-night basis. So they're going to be in at the very end against the Yankees and against the Astros, and the real question is, this time around when they play those teams, are they all going to pack it in like they did against the Indians 2 years ago or against the Astros last year, where only Hanley Ramirez and David Price showed up? I think one of the things that I learned last year from just watching the Astros run is that their bullpen sucked. It still stinks. They decided, though, to use a lot of their starting pitchers, who have been off to a fantastic start this year. But their starting pitchers came into the bullpen, and they proved to be adequate. I'm with you. I need to see more out of Eduardo Rodriguez. He's gotten a lot of run support in every single one of his starts. And then when we take a look at Drew Pomerantz, I don't know what to say. I think at this point, maybe you put him on the DL for like a quotation mark sort of injury and see what happens. Appreciate the phone call, Drew. 617-779-7937. I'm shocked, though, when I hear the people that are down on the team. They have 31 wins this year. They have split their games with the Yankees. And to make the point that they're playing 500 baseball of late, that's how baseball works. I mean, they will have a stretch probably this year where they don't play particularly well. But honestly, don't you want to win 6 out of every 10 or so? Because that's about where they're at. I don't know, 500 baseball going, like the start was incredible. You're right. You're 100% right, Drew. The start was ridiculous. I mean, how many losses did they have through the first 18? What, two? That was it? It was ridiculous. And then, of course, they lost a couple in a row. They lost, I think, 5 of 7. And here they are. It's really about how they play against good teams, more so than it is about they're playing 500 baseball. And the Rays, somehow again, they're going into a series against Tampa Bay with Tampa Bay on a winning streak, which is bizarre. Seems like it's happened a couple of times. It's happened twice this year. The Rays, I thought, were going to be absolute dog crap this year. And here they are, 22-22. They're starting relievers after a day where the reliever pitched for the first inning, and then they're moving on. They're doing all sorts of analytical nerd stuff. And give them credit. I mean, they have no one. They don't have anyone. And they're making it work. Meanwhile, the Miami Marlins are trying to get tax exemptions by claiming that they're in the British Virgin Islands and are revoking reporters' credentials for having the audacity to fly down to the British Virgin Islands and go to the address that they have listed so that they could somehow get around some tax responsibilities that they have for Miami-Dade County. It's stupid. Just absolutely dumb. But look, I find it very hard to be frustrated with the Red Sox right now. If you're frustrated over the last couple of years and you're in a, well, you got to prove it in a moment that actually matters kind of mindset, I get it. I understand it. I mean, they are still a team that I think needs to earn love back, and you can't really do it during the regular season. You're not playing in big spots. And while the first sequence with the New York Yankees this year and the Joe Kelly fight that was saw Joe Kelly come out, basically his shirt's completely off. He's looked like he just got dragged into the back room of a strip club or something like that. When that game took place, I did feel it move a little bit when it comes to liking this team again, because you're saying to yourself, okay, well, you know what? If they're going to get in fights with the Yankees, that makes baseball a little bit more enjoyable. I'll be honest. I'm not the biggest baseball fan. It is a very long regular season. I love playoff baseball. Regular season baseball, games against the Orioles, how much do they matter? And for the people that I guess are disappointed with the Red Sox right now, which again, you got a really high standard. I understand the high standard growing up here with all the titles that I've seen, with all the titles that you guys have seen, that you're expecting a whole lot more out of a team that just makes the playoffs. But they have a different vibe than last year. I think that's absolutely for certain. And just because they're playing around 500 baseball over the last couple of weeks, I don't feel like that's a reason to say, oh, they're just not good. I'm down on them. So, Drew, I disagree with you, man. J.D. Martinez, to me, is he clearly the best signing for this team since Manny Ramirez?
Oh, Paul, you're saying this like, I don't know, a month and a half into the year. What are you talking about?
Very, very reactionary by me. But he has been incredible since he came in here. And I didn't think there was any way that he could be this good. I really didn't. I know that he hit well with the Detroit Tigers, and he really raked with the Diamondbacks last year after they traded him there. But I didn't expect him to come out of the gates this way. And, I mean, they intentionally walk him his second at-bat. He still ends up with two home runs. He's tied for the major league lead again with Mookie Betts. And you have a very, very friendly deal with him, though he does have a lot of control. He has opt-outs for himself after year two and year three. 5 years, $110 million, considering the production we've seen thus far, a bit of a steal. Now, if he plays this well the rest of this year, and he has a solid season next year, he's probably, in fact, I would say definitely going to opt out and see if he can get any more. Because after all, he does have Scott Boras. But what we have seen out of him thus far is something I could not have possibly expected, much like I did not expect the Red Sox offense to get off to the start that they have, to see Mookie Betts take his game to new heights, to see Andrew Benintendi, especially recently, he's been one of their hottest hitters of late, bouncing back from a struggle of a season last year. And, I mean, you got Bogarts, you have Hanley still playing at the high level that he was playing at in the divisional round against the Houston Astros. If he's playing that well in a big spot like that, there are a lot of things to feel good about with this team. None of them have to do with the bullpen, obviously. I mean, you might feel solid about Craig Kimbrell, but he has looked more human than normal this year. But you got three starting pitchers at the top of the rotation that, when healthy, are really good. We just saw it from David Price in his last start. I guess there were no allergens, dogs, cats, sunlight, anything else to potentially antagonize him out there. But, I mean, he has a complete game, two-run outing over the weekend. You're seeing some very good things out of this team. I'm surprised that there are people like Drew right now. 617-779-7937. Jeff is in the car. Jeff, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, my friend? Great start to the year. All happy about the Sox. But I'm curious what your take is. I think Pedroia is going to be an important piece. And overall, I'm just kind of curious in the past, especially last year, maybe a strong leadership player stepping up. And that's the only thing I could see that could be an issue for this year.
And yeah, no, I'm with you. I think Pedroia's absence has helped them out. I think that with Pedroia not there, I think that these other guys have realized that they need to step up, in particular the really young players. Mookie Betts, Xander Bogarts. I think without Pedroia, it's been good for them. They have a little bit of room to grow. It must be intimidating if you're a young player on the Red Sox and you're there, especially with David Ortiz a couple of years ago, but now with Dustin Pedroia, who has pelts on the wall, even though he's definitely on the downswing of his career, to be a young player and to say, hey, we need to do X, Y, and Z. I mean, because the guys who are this team's best pitchers are have been around the block for a while. Chris Sale, you're talking about David Price, who again isn't exactly someone you're turning to for leadership, maybe as someone that you want to play a little Fortnite with, but you needed, I think, a little bit of space for these young guys. And I think that Pedroia being away has unintentionally been a benefit for these guys. What is Pedroia going to bring when he gets back? I don't know. I mean, I don't feel that he's absolutely desperately needed back there. Yes, he's probably going to give you more production than Eduardo Nunez and Brock Holt, but is it going to be a whole lot more? I don't know. I don't think so. But he's one of the establishment of this team, and I think when he comes back, he will find a way back out there. 617-779-7937. I'm Paul Gallant. This is Red Sox Review on WEEI. Is it possible for the Red Sox to get away without addressing their bullpen this year? We will discuss that next because there's something they're doing that reminds me a whole lot out of the defending champs from last year. I'm Paul Gallant. This is Red Sox Review. Don't go anywhere.
Dial 617-779-7937. Now, Red Sox Review on WEEI.
And the 0-2 swing. There's a line drive ripped to right field. A base hit toward the line. Jackie hits first. He's on his way to second. Bobbled out there by Rickard. And Jackie's into second with a double. He hit a bullet on a 91-mile-an-hour fastball. Right, that must be a tremendous relief to him. He cranked that one, hit it very hard.
It's weird with Jackie Bradley Jr. He does anything positive, and you're like, yay, good for you, Jackie, good for you. Yeah, all right. And then you see him in other situations, and he, well, blows rallies. He had a double that led to a wonderful fifth inning for the Boston Red Sox. They get an Andrew Benintendi two-run homer, a Mitch Moreland ground rule double later in that inning, and then J.D. Martinez's second homer with a deep blast to center field. Look at that, Bradley Jr., Jackie Bradley Jr., that guy, starting a rally. But then you go to the second inning. J.D. Martinez leads things off. He squeezes it around Pesky's pole for his 14th of the year. Devers walks. Rodriguez strikes out swinging. Nunez strikes out swinging. Holt bloops one to right field for a hit. Vasquez grounds into a fielder's choice. So there's two outs. There's runners on first and third. Oh, no, it's Jackie Bradley Jr. Oh, no, he struck out. Okay, he struck out swinging. Well, okay, you know, better luck next time. He got the double the next time around. But then again, after a walk in the sixth inning, which you're saying to yourself, look, Jackie Bradley Jr. adding a little bit to the offensive side of things. But in the seventh inning, after Brock Holt goes from first to third on a Christian Vasquez single, Jackie Bradley Jr., again, the third strikeout of the inning, he's gone. That's it. And you wonder at this point, how much longer can you get away with putting him out there? Because defense, he's so good defensively, Paul. He's so good. But if you can't hit at all, what's the point? What's the point? And especially when Pedroia eventually comes back to the team, you have a little bit of flexibility. The real question is, all right, well, who do you move into center field? Do you move Mookie there? What do you do after that? Where do you go? Who do you put in right field? Do you want Andrew Benintendi there? Do you move J.D. Martinez to the outfield? I'll be honest, I don't really want J.D. Martinez in the outfield. The last time I saw him in the outfield, he had a line drive lined right at him. He didn't see it, went over his head, and the next thing you know, there's a guy on base, and it was in an embarrassing fashion that he got on base. But Jackie Bradley Jr. is hitting 165. That is minor league caliber. 617-779-7937. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Red Sox Review. Marcy's in Connecticut. Marcy, what's up?
Hey, I called to talk about JBJ, as a matter of fact, before you even started talking about him. Is there any talk, no, excuse me for being a little out of step with this, but is there any talk about sending him back to Pawtucket to rehab, to get his groove back, to get his mojo?
I don't know if there's any getting it back. I mean, do you feel that this is the kind of guy that can get back to any kind of offensive punch ability? I just don't think so. I don't think that's him. So I think that you keep him around defensively. I don't know, like for situational spots and keep him on the bench. But at some point, you got to take him out of the lineup. And I know that he was 1-for-3 today, and he had a double, and he had a walk, and maybe you're feeling good about those two. But he killed two rallies with strikeouts. And I don't know what you can really say other than this guy does need some time away. But I don't think Pawtucket's going to help him find his swing, Marcy.
You don't think so, huh? I don't know. I mean, they sent Mo Vaughn back down. He did pretty good after that.
True, but that's Mo Vaughn, and I don't think that Jackie, you know. I don't think Jackie Bradley Jr. is going to all of a sudden turn into Mo Vaughn. And I know you're not saying that. I don't think he's going to turn back into what he is, though. I think at this point, he is essentially a guy that you have as a great defensive option for late inning situations if you're doing some pinch hitting. But outside of that, like that's really all he gives you at this point. And yeah, they got to get him out of the lineup, I think. Appreciate the phone call, Marcy. 617-779-7937 is how you call in. Going in to this segment, I was talking about the Red Sox bullpen, and I'm wondering if the Red Sox can get away without addressing that bullpen for a while. And I say that because I look at what the World Series champions of last year did, the Astros. Their bullpen was shaky. It was very shaky. We saw in the playoffs, too. But they had great performances from their lineup. The difference between the Astros and Red Sox, the Red Sox of this year, the Astros of last year, is that Astros team was hitting 1-9. The Red Sox have been getting some adequate performances, though, towards the back of the order. Brock Holt, I mean, he's hitting 329. He's playing really well as your utility guy. I like having him out there. And again, on a night where you had, or on a day where you had no Xander Bogaerts and you had no Hanley Ramirez because both had the day off, it was a pretty compelling performance by Brock Holt in terms of getting more playing time going forward. Eduardo Nunez, he has to do better than that if he wants to continue to get playing time with Pedroia coming up. But for the most part, this lineup, you go all the way up and down the order. When Hanley and Xander Bogaerts are back, they are just as firepower laden as that Astros team as last year was. So as long as you can score runs on a consistent basis, especially in the playoffs, maybe you can get away with having a shaky bullpen, and maybe you can throw some of these back-of-the-end starters into situations where you're asking them to be a reliever, because you're going to go to a three-man rotation when the playoffs begin, and you've got your three guys. You've got Sale, you've got Price, who's coming off of a great start, and you've got Porcello, who is bouncing back from a couple of shaky outings with a 9-strikeout performance of his own. So you feel pretty good about the top three guys that you have. The real question is, all right, do you feel that Eduardo Rodriguez can be someone that you can actually rely on in a big spot? I don't know. This was a nice performance today, and I thought he looked great against Manny Machado, but can he do that against New York? We've seen him solid against New York. We have. We've seen him hitting 97 on the gun, too. He's tricky. We had a caller a little bit earlier saying, well, what are we really getting out of Eduardo Rodriguez? It's a great question. It really is a great question. I think, though, he's trending in the right direction. The real question, Pomerantz. Oh, man. And he's starting to say all those things. Like a lot of pitchers, they'll say BS along the lines of, well, you know, my stuff was really good. It was really good out there. And they're meanwhile, they're getting shelled. But he's starting to say the kind of things that you hear from someone who's not confident in his play. And there's no listed starter for his next, what should be his next scheduled start next week against the Tampa Bay Rays. 617-779-7937. I'm Paul Gallant. This is Red Sox Review on WEEI. Tom is in Westfield. Tom, what's up?
Yeah, hi. I just want to talk about Jackie Bradley. You know, I think the last couple of years when he's hitting number nine, he just leave him alone hitting number nine. He seems to do okay. And so I was wondering if somebody could check out the facts on him just hitting number nine and leaving him alone. Because
him in the nine spot.
Just leave him in the number nine spot. I think he saves us a run every couple games.
I don't know, though, with the way he's hitting right now, and I know, like, today wasn't a terrible performance by him, because he did have the double and he did have the walk, but he struck out twice in big spots, and he's hitting 165, you know? I don't think you can just continue to say, leave him in the nine hole, because if he's not giving you anything at the back, well, what's the point of having a leadoff hitter like Mookie Betts when he is, you know, hitting all the home runs that he has? He has 15 home runs on the year. That's tied for the American League lead. But if no one's setting the table for him, when you get around to the next to your second at bat, your third at bat, what the hell's the point? You know, I know Jackie Bradley Jr.'s fast, but to have him out there and doing absolutely nothing, striking out and killing rallies, and not setting up Mookie Betts in front of him, that's a huge, huge issue. I think. I mean, with the way that Betts has been playing this year, And with the home run numbers in particular, he should be driving in more runs. 617-779-7937. Bill is in the car. Bill, what's up?
Yeah, I want to explain to you why they have such an offensive production this year compared to last year. Last year, Farrell was obsessed with driving up the pitch count, and nobody was allowed to swing at the first pitch. They couldn't take the bat off their shoulder until they had one strike on them, and that took all the air out of the balloon. frequently the best pitch that you see at the at-bat is the first pitch. And they were not allowed to swing at it this year, last year. This year they were allowed to swing at it. And that's the only reason. It's no big mystery.
It's amazing that they didn't reconsider their approach, though, with how poorly the offensive played last year, isn't it, Bill? I mean, you know, you'd think you would get more runs if at some point, and appreciate the phone call, that you change your approach a little bit. And what Bill talked about, this is, to me, one of the reasons that baseball can be as much of a slog as it can. I mean, you guys have to wait until your first pitch strike. No, swing it whatever's good. Like, be aggressive at the plate. Be aggressive nonstop. Don't be too aggressive. Don't be too crazy. But you get a nice pitch. Swing at it. And you know what? That's about the most satisfying explanation I can get as to how awful John Farrell and Chili Davis were last year. I remember going into this season, this is a team that likes to, well, leave a little bit of dirty laundry whenever there's somebody that leaves the reservation and pin the blame on them. One of the reasons I'm a little bit not feeling the same way that I used to about the Sox is the way that they handled Terry Francona at the very end. Really, the guy managed for 8 years. You think it's because of pills or a divorce that the Red Sox are eating chicken and drinking beer in the clubhouse and having the 2011 collapse? Yeah, they got fat and happy. Was it necessary to drag all that up? And then you go to Bobby Valentine and you're trying to tell me that this guy's not capable of being a manager when you have an actual cartoon character doing it the next year. But Cora's been great. Farrell must have really sucked. Chili Davis must have really sucked. That much is clear. 617-779-7937. Red Sox review after a 5-0 win over the Baltimore Orioles. The Red Sox take 3 out of 4 from Baltimore before they take on the Tampa Bay Rays in St. Petersburg, Florida, starting on Tuesday. I do want to touch on the Celtics. Honestly, what we saw from that team last year and what we have been seeing from this team this year, when you watch something like last night, is that something that we should expect for Game 4? Let's talk about that next. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Red Sox Review, 617-779-7937. Don't go anywhere.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Do you sense of disappointment, step away from this game and just look at the other side and say they had more effort than you did tonight?
No disappointment. No disappointment. Just all the credit goes to them. We got to play better. That's something. We can't win them all. Obviously, we wanted this one. It'd be good to go 3-0, start the series, but everything don't go as planned.
Obviously, you needed one like this. What do you mean?
We need to get our buzz whipped. Come back to reality and take care of business on Monday.
That's Terry Rozier. The Celtics needed a wake-up call. Yeah, they needed more than that. They needed all sorts of, I don't know, performance-enhancing drugs, adrenaline, anything last night. That was pathetic. 116-86, they fell to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Look, they were going to have a game where they didn't play well against Cleveland. If you thought a team that doesn't have Kyrie Irving or Gordon Hayward was going to end up sweeping a team with LeBron James, you're insane. That was not going to happen. Even if the Cavs in Game 2 looked like they had quit, they didn't quit on the series, they quit on the game. Though they do not seem to particularly enjoy playing with LeBron James. A lot of eye rolling, a lot of shrugs, a lot of things that I would expect from a team with one of the most passive-aggressive, annoying players that I can remember watching sports in my life. Great player, though. Absolutely fantastic player. He was awesome in the first quarter. Rest of the game, he wasn't so good in Game 2. But the whole Cavs team was engaged last night. It was 32-17 at the end of the first quarter. Cleveland never came close to slowing down. They outscored Boston every quarter, including the fourth. And that's interesting. I know the Celtics pulled a lot of their guys with like 7 minutes left or so, and you saw them all sitting, all the main pieces, Marcus Morris, Al Horford, Marcus Smart, Rozier, Tatum, and Jaylen Brown all sitting next to each other, looking annoyed, but obviously still looking at a 2-1 series lead. But last night was pathetic. I go back to times that I watched the team last year and getting frustrated with them just realizing that they didn't have a whole lot of talent. But then I look at the team this season, and in particular in these playoffs, they have not played well on the road, but they've never mailed it in. They mailed it in last night. I don't know where they had the audacity to think that that was going to be something that would allow them to walk away with a win. You can underestimate Cleveland all you want. And honestly, with the supporting cast around LeBron James, with the J.R. Smiths of the world, I suppose it's easy to do it. But just because you won Game 1 and Game 2 convincingly at home, shouldn't you look at your previous road performances in these playoffs where you were, what, 1-3, now 1-4, and say, you know, we have to make sure that we step on their throats early on. And instead, I mean, half-assed defense, rushed shots. I mean, good God, you're shooting shots with 22 to 18 seconds left on the shot clock, and you're missing them too. Lots of long contested jump shots. It's basically like it was an entire team of swaggy peas out there. Nick Young, in case you don't know it. Just irrational confidence, stupid heat check shots, AAU basketball, everything that's bad with basketball offense from them last night. And I like this team a lot, but I hate to see a team like this that has made a mark for themselves consistently being a team that doesn't ever let up effort-wise, in particular in Game 2, especially after the first quarter with LeBron James opening up the way that he did. I totally have seen a young Celtics team with two of their best players, 21 years old, mailing it in, curling up in the fetal position or something like that. But they rushed shots. They totally ignored Al Horford. I refuse to believe that Tristan Bleeping Thompson, who I doubt is playing without any distractions at all with some of the stuff going on in his personal life, Tristan Thompson took Al Horford out of the game? No, the Celtics, they for whatever reason forgot about Al Horford. I don't buy that Tristan Thompson is beating Al Horford in the matchup of the most overpaid players in this series. No offense to Al Horford, who has been really good in these playoffs, but $27.7 million. That's a lot of money. Again, he's lived up to it for the most part. Tristan Thompson's making $16.4 million somehow. I don't buy that Tristan Thompson is just keeping Horford out of the game. I think the Celtics, for whatever reason, they got away from it in the last game and a half. They can't do that. Horford, he's the catalyst to a lot of things for this team, and he's, of course, the guy on this team that I trust consistently more than anyone else. Tatum, I like. Tatum had some great moments last night, but Tatum, I still feel like, is a little bit hesitant to just take over the game entirely, and I think the Celtics are a little hesitant to make it all go through him. And some of the other guys, too. Marcus Morris, Terry Rozier. If you guys are going to go into irrational confidence mode, hit your shots in the paint, please. Please, for the love of God, do something like that. And the worst part of all, call me old classic basketball fan that says back in my day, even though there was really no back in my day for me, I'm 29 years old. Back in my day, they played defense. Yeah, defense wins championships, blah, blah, blah. Put some defense out there. Good God. It's not that hard to out-effort this Cleveland Cavaliers team. I'm sorry. It's a bunch of guys that were brought in because LeBron James was bored with the toys that he had. And honestly, they don't have the kind of playoff experience that would be necessary to, I think, look at them and say, yeah, these guys are really good. But at the same time, like, play defense on them. You have as many good defenders as you do. You have as many guys that can handle the ball on the offensive end as you do. You should be able to keep a team like that in check. Instead, you didn't. It was bad communication. It was an embarrassing loss. So Rozier can say, okay, you know, it's a wake-up call. To me, it's, okay, this team still has a lot of issues to work through. And I do have doubts about Game 4. Game 4 on the road with how this team's played on the road thus far in the playoffs. And honestly, given what we just saw, there's a real good chance that Cleveland evens this thing up tomorrow night. And when you're playing with a team that's essentially built on a six-man rotation, there's a very, very, very good chance that they could be worn out by the end of the series. That's what concerns me most. You're on the road. You only have a day off in between these two games. And while those guys got lots of rest in the fourth quarter, you're playing basically with six guys that you can reliably count on for an entire game. 617-779-7937. If you have any Celtics thoughts, as the Celtics now lead the series against the Cavs with game number four tomorrow in Cleveland. They lose 116-86. Yikes. That was an awful, awful performance. I'm Paul Gallant. This is Red Sox Review on WEEI. Coming up next, okay, who are you relying on more for this Red Sox team? J.D. Martinez or Mookie Betts? And who do you think is going to end up with the better year? We'll discuss that and if this offense can continue to do what it has been doing to open up the year. Red Sox Review continues next. Don't go anywhere.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.